SasquatchProWrestling.com.
Do you know what's not $9.99 and absolutely free?
The Radio Takedown Network!
The Radio Takedown Network.com. Thank you for calling the 24-hour Dobashi's Radio Takedown Hotline. By leaving your message after the tone means you give your consent, and it may be played on the show.
I want to drink Animal Simon. Animal Simon. Lots and lots of Animal Simon.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Thank you for downloading and listening. This is episode 99, and you're listening to
Radio Takedown,
the flagship show of the Radio Takedown Network. And I'm your host, the Beast from the Middle East, the Yemeni Maniac, the modern day Sheikh Dayfala, the Butcher Dabashi.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I'm just a professional wrestler who wants to entertain you listeners the best way I can and make that paper. The best way to show your support is spread the word. Go to Blog Talk Radio and follow Dabashi's Radio Takedown on the Radio Takedown Network, or subscribe on iTunes or any other source you get your podcast from. Be sure to leave a good review. Every little bit helps. Best thing about it, it's absolutely free and you won't miss a single episode, and you can catch up on all the past episodes. You can also follow me on Twitter, @DabashiRT. Also, I am ordained. I can marry you and also give you all your blessing needs. I'm available for bookings, for appearances, to wrestle, etc., etc., @DabashiBookings@gmail.com. Now, if you want to feel sexy,
yes,
and support this show, you can buy a limited Dabashi's Radio Takedown t-shirt from my Pro Wrestling Tee store. I made it easy for each and every one of you. You can get all the latest episodes and all the links and email addresses at www.theradiotakedownnetwork.com. I'm excited to have a friend of mine on, Scrapyard Dog, back here once again on Dabashi's Radio Takedown, Lewis McNair. We're going to be talking about his book, Booking 101, and some conspiracy theories. But first, let's get through a couple of our segments.
It's time for Dabashi's Email of the Week. More outrageous, the better.
I read your email this morning soon as I got out of bed. Poetry is great. Display such wit and rhyme. You gotta read it on a TV talk show when you find the time. What do you say? Hey, 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 hey. What do you say?
Dear Dabashi, my two male neighbors are a married gay couple. They are very quiet and they keep to themselves, but I notice strange activity going on. Guys dressed as women, lesbians, they're coming and going, and to top it off, they just adopted a baby. In my opinion, my neighborhood is going downhill. What should I do? I want to improve my neighborhood. I feel very uncomfortable. Donovan from the Emerald City. Dear Donovan from the Emerald City, you could move. I want to give a special shout out to a guy today that came up to me at the gas station early this morning. See, I was pumping gas, and a gentleman came up to me and gave me a sob story on how he and his family was stranded down the street, that they ran out of gas. He wanted me to give him some money for gas. I told him, I'll do one even better. Give me your gas can. I will fill it up. I had the gas pump in my hand. I'll fill your can up, and I'll drive him back to his car, to his family. He just looked at me, and he told me to F off. I guess you couldn't scan this guy. I will be right back with my guest Scrapyard Dog on the other side of this break.
Until the world goes cold. It is my privilege to have back once again one of the craftiest and savviest and meanest guy in the yard, and the yard is the square circle, the one and only scrapyard dog, Mr. Lewis McNair. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing pretty good. Nice to be back on your podcast again. Thanks for having me back.
Oh, no problem. Anytime, brother. Long time no hear, long time no see. How's the weather over there right now? We're doing this recording, and we got it's like World War III outside. We got trees flying, the compounds, you know, anchored pretty good to the ground. And how's the weather in your neck of the woods?
Well, over the past week with Hurricane Matthew coming through, it was kind of rough, especially with, near the coastal towns and coastal states and stuff like that. But we had rain up in, in Greensboro that just past Saturday, pretty bad. But now things have done, pretty much calmed down. But, as far as weather down the coastal towns, as far as the floods and stuff, they're still waiting for the waters to recede so they can go in and assess damage and, help people that need help in those areas.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Wow. Wow. Yeah, Mother Nature, man, ain't no pushover. It pushes things over.
Yes. You're right. Ain't nothing you can do about it.
Yep. Just pray and hold on to something to anchor you down. But how's things going? What do you got working on? I notice, every week on your Facebook, you got this booking 101, and I know you're working on a book. How's the book coming along?
Book's going pretty good. I'm still, putting the pieces together. Basically, booking 101 is I write what I post on my Facebook page is like excerpts from the book or things that I'm working on that I'm putting in the book, and basically what it is a self-help guide for guys who are green or just coming to the business or, you have to understand some, what it's going to talk about, like terminology, psychology, what the baby face's role is, what the heel's role is, what the promoter's job is, the booker who's booking the show, and things of that nature. So I include every Friday, I do three booking one-on-one tweets that go straight to my Facebook page. So people who follow me on Twitter can see it, and then, my Facebook, people I have friends with on Facebook can see it. That's basically what it is.
Yeah, and I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just trying to throw that out there that, the interesting thing about, I came up with the idea just sitting around one day thinking, what would happen if somebody were to put this in book form?
Mm-hmm.
Because, you could always pick it up and read it and, oh, that's what he meant. Oh, that's what he was talking about and stuff like that. Because I don't think that's ever been done. So I figured, why not me? So I just put it out there.
Exactly.
And it's not something like this 100% right way or wrong way to do it. It's just a guide to help, especially for those getting started. That's what it's basically aimed toward.
Yeah, and it's a good thing because, the art of the territory wrestling, the art of riding in the car, and the greenhorns are the students, and basically the automobile was the classroom. And since pretty much the territories is gone, back in the old NWA days, that
mm-hmm.
I guess this is another way for them to learn. And I just wanted to read this one from 6 hours ago you tweeted, hashtag booking 101. Which is better, calling everything in the locker room or calling everything in the ring, and why? And any listeners out there, go ahead and answer that. Just email your wives to radiotakedown@gmail.com or call the hotline, leave a voice message, and we may, or I will, use your voice misses on the next show. And I already know what you'd probably say is probably the same answer I would give, but what do you think is better, calling in the locker room or in the ring?
One of the answers I got from somebody to comment on about, you know, it depends a lot of times on the situation.
Right.
Me personally, I like, if it's a one-on-one situation, I like to get a good opening, a good finish to the match. And then if I'm working heel, which is the bad guy role for those who don't know, if I'm working heel, I'll call everything else in the middle.
There you go.
Comes back, you know, come back, hold spots, cut off, things like that. That's the way I prefer to do it. I've been in the ring with guys that like to call everything in the back, and then you get out there in the ring and you get the stuff you call in the back. But I always try to, you know, especially if I'm working heel, give that baby face his shine, hold spots, keep, you know, keep him alive, keep him fighting back, things of that nature. And then, you know, finally gets that comeback, and then we, you know, start in the process toward the later part of the match, taking it home. Like I say, but that's just the way I prefer to do it. Now, some guys, you know, get in the back and call everything in the back. And like I said, I've been in the ring with guys that do that. And, they left the match, I forgot to call that. I forgot to do this. I forgot to do that, you know. But as long as I got a basic idea of what type of story we're trying to tell, and I try to piece my matches together, you know, based on, so am I going to put the heat on his arm? Am I going to work his back? You know, what have you, his leg, what have you? Because I'm very old school in that regard. But for me, it's more sensible to get a good opening, a good finish, depending on what the promoter wants to do, toward the end of the match, and then construct the match to lead up to that finish.
Yeah, and you know what I noticed, too? You know what I noticed, too? What I noticed, too, is, like, a lot of these younger cats, they'll go through the whole match, and one thing is, if they screw up, they're like, lost. And another thing is...
Yeah, deer in the headlights, exactly.
Yeah, deer in the headlights. And then another thing is, a lot of times you got to read the crowd and change your game plan, you know, kind of listen to the crowd, and they're doing their whole routine, and the crowd's not responding, and they wonder why. I mean, I think the heart's just slipping away. I mean, what's your thoughts on that?
Oh, the R's definitely slipping away. Storytelling is definitely slipping away because guys get in the ring nowadays, it's all about me. How much stuff can I get in?
Yep.
How many moves can I do? How can I look? And you're not thinking about your dance partner in the ring. Okay, what are you going to do, especially if you're heel, what are you going to do to make him look good?
Yeah.
You know, because the baby face puts over heel puts over the baby face. And to the two that you're putting over me at the top of the strangle, that's how you draw money. And guys seem to forget that it's all about me. What can I do to make my own self look good? And my thing is, you know, is to make that baby face, especially work here, to make that baby face look good.
Now, what's your opinion on the promoters nowadays? I mean, yeah, there's a few good ones out there that are drawing and doing good. I mean, do you think the problem is marks or just it's too easy to get into business, and might be promoters are just smart and they're not really promoting. They're just really just doing it because it's their dream to be around wrestling. What's your take on that?
Me personally, I've dealt with a lot of like shiesty promoters that, you know, don't like to pay their talent.
Right.
Want to get all their friends they know that will work for free. And let's just face it, it makes the show look like crap.
Yep.
When you get guys on your show, just because you ain't got to pay them, you know, and they don't know what they're doing, they don't know how to work. Okay, and it just, to me, if you're going to have good talent on your show, then you got to pay them.
Exactly.
Because as a promoter, you put your reputation on the line.
Exactly.
That makes you look bad as a promoter when you're booking guys that you know don't know what to do. Oh, I got a spot for you just because you ain't got to pay them.
Exactly.
I've never subscribed to that theory. I've never understood that. But nowadays, that seems to be the norm because anybody can get a ring. Oh, I'm a promoter, you know what I'm saying, and I do this and then I run wrestling shows. That don't mean that you know what you're doing.
You know,
because you got to ring and call your friends over, you know, whatever they have to put together a show.
On the internet, I saw someone put up this. It might have been you're not getting booked. I can't remember, but it was. I don't know because I'm getting older or what, or I'm you know, been doing a long time. You know, got to know the business, but I watched it and it was a crap match. I mean, it was bad. I my eyes were burning, and it really pissed me off. Really pissed me off. First of all, they didn't have a ring gear. They didn't have to work. And then it made me sit back. This is why sometimes it's embarrassing to say you're a professional wrestler because of stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Just, I don't know. It is what it is.
Well, I mean, I have to agree with you because a lot of indie shows I do, I see the same thing. Guys that don't have gear, they get in the ring, like I said before, they don't know what they're doing.
Yep.
And it's just, I mean, nowadays, okay, see, back in the old days, there was a certain term called tighten the circle.
Uh-huh.
And back in those days, everybody wasn't allowed in.
It's like a mafia.
Okay. Yeah, it was a real, real tight circle.
Yep.
Those guys in those days protected the business of professional wrestling. You had to protect the business. Okay. Nowadays, hey, just get you some cut-off jeans and put on some tennis shoes. Hey, you can be a wrestler. Anybody can be a promoter. Anybody can be a booker. And that's the reason why the business, you know, especially on the indie scene, has fallen so far down.
Yeah. I can't remember. It was a veteran. It was a name guy. I can't remember, but he brought up a good point. Back in the day, like you said, they were a tight circle. Everybody knew everybody. You know, mm-hmm. They knew their families. And he goes, nowadays, you go into an independent show, you don't know if you're wrestling with a child telefiler or a murderer or what. And he said it was kind of scary. And I sat back and I was thinking about that. And I go, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, well, you don't know.
Exactly. Matter of fact, I won't say no names. You know, I was, you know, licensed PI, and there was a pedophiler that was
I can already tell this story ain't gonna be good.
Yeah. And make a long story short, the guy was a real nice guy. It was sad. And he was training some guys and had some shows going, but he wanted me to start booking for him and all that. And next thing, one thing led to another, and he got accused of some stuff. Someone found out, and he goes, "Can you back me?" I said, "Listen, I said I'm not gonna." I said, "You're my friend and all, but I'm not gonna just back you because if you are, I look bad." He goes, "Oh, yeah, do what you got to do. You're an investigator, I promise." Make a long story short, 2 days later, they sent him to prison.
Wow.
And it was sad. I didn't want it to be true, but he was a nice guy. And he did, like, he didn't do very much time, but me, his ex-girlfriend, a couple of the boys went to the court just to see the charges. And it was like, two or three counts of second degree child rape or something, and it was pretty sick. It was. I forgot what it was, but it was whatever he did. It was pretty bad. I mean, my stomach.
Me personally, I'm just gonna go ahead and tell you my take on that. I have zero.
Amen.
Zero respect for anybody that rapes a woman or rapes a child or hurts a kid, anything like that. Zero respect for you as a human being.
And to top it off, the promoter that was booking him, I told him, I said, you know what? I got heat. I got heat because I was investigating by the guy that was a promoter that was booking him. You know, he was over. And he says, where's the brotherhood? Where's this and that? I said, hey, this kid's involved. My son was never alone with him, but my son came with me. You know what I'm saying? Because, you know, it could have been my son. It could have been someone else. And I got heat and from this promoter, and he was cussing me and this and that. As soon as I got out of court, I called him up, and I said, next time, because he said he did his own homework and none of these charges were true. I said, next time, you better – I forgot what I told him. And he got a lot of heat for that. He almost lost his promotion because the place he was running, you know, was doing, you know, benefit for kids and stuff. But anyway, that's enough on that. Right? I have zero tolerance for what you said, too. I mean, that's just a sick situation. Right? Shoot.
Yeah, that's bad. But
yeah, I just now remember that. It happened like 2 years ago. Offline, I could tell you who it is, but he's not. Mm-hmm. No one will book him anymore. He's out now. But
yeah, well, that would do it.
Yep. Well, I know you're a man of my own heart. I know you're big on the conspiracy theories. What is there any big conspiracy theories right now offhand that you're actually looking into or doing homework on?
Well, you know, one of the biggest, I wouldn't call it a conspiracy per se, but one of the big misconceptions, let's put it that way, is for most Americans to think that the president of the United States runs this country. That's absolutely 100% false. And for anybody that says anything, it doesn't matter what party they come from, what color they are, what gender they are. It does not matter. The president of the United States is a figurehead. Nothing more, nothing less. Now, if you want to know who actually runs the country, I'm going to tell you.
Okay.
You have three entities that run this country.
Can I give one guess? Is the Rockefellers one of them?
In a roundabout way.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, you know there were five, what you call, banking dynasties.
Okay.
The Rockefellers, the Morgans. I forget the one that had five sons that sent each one of his sons into different countries, and they finagled Rothschild, that's what he was. He went to send five of his sons into different countries, and they finagled their way until they got control. Got control of it. I want you to listen to this. Got control. Or they had the control to be able to print the money for their country, which is basically the central banking concept. And that's the exact same thing our Federal Reserve is right today. The Federal Reserve is not federal. It's a private corporation.
So you said the guy sent his siblings to other countries? So basically...
He sent his sons to other countries to finagle their way into getting control of printing the money for that country. And once and that's what the Federal Reserve... Every single time we get in a war with somebody, the federal government borrows money from the Federal Reserve Bank, which is a central bank, okay? And a lot of people don't realize this, that was one of the primary causes of the Revolutionary War, because our founding fathers warned against it and tried to keep us away from that. because the 13 colonies had their own money. But the King of England wanted the colonies to borrow from him at interest. That's the same thing our Federal Reserve does. Every time our government wants to borrow money for some jacked-up war we get into, it has absolutely nothing to do with reality to start with.
Gaddafi. I'm sorry, go ahead.
What happened? Let me get this point out, and then we'll continue.
Okay.
What happens is once the federal government borrows the money from the central bank, the Federal Reserve Bank, at interest, who do you think pays the interest on the debt?
The citizens?
Exactly. Because in 1913 is when the Federal Reserve was signed into law. That same year, the IRS was created. You didn't know that, did you?
I do now.
The IRS was created to... That's why we pay the federal income tax, because every time we get into war, the government needs to borrow money for... the Federal Reserve prints the money for this country. They print money out of thin air.
So it's sort of like
So every single dollar that the government borrows from the Federal Reserve has interest attached to it. And our tax dollars pay the interest on that debt. We get into a war in Vietnam. We paid for it. We got in wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. We paid for it. World War II, same thing. World War I, same thing. But the three entities that run this country are the Federal Reserve, your multinational corporations, and your international bankers. That's who run this country, not the President of the United States, not the Congress. Okay? Nothing to do with it.
Speaking of, you know, money and stuff, I read somewhere that, I don't know if it was Hillary or whatnot, but someone wanted Gaddafi out of there because something about he didn't want his money backed in gold anymore or something to that effect. Do you know anything about that?
Well, in this country, I think it was a federal law passed in 1933 that essentially robbed the American people. Because if you look at the dollar bill before 1933, it was redeemable in gold.
Right, but not no more.
Not anymore. And you know, I think it was a federal law passed, I think it was 1933 or 34, somewhere in that area, that said that every citizen in this country had to turn over all their gold with the threat of imprisonment. If you didn't turn, that's what they put you in prison.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially robbing the American people of what little bit of wealth they had left. Because the Federal Reserve prints the money. It's absolutely worth it. It's backed by nothing. Absolutely worth
it. So was that the reason why they wanted, was there any truth about what I heard about Gaddafi, why they wanted him out of there?
Let me research that.
Okay.
But I can tell you this. You know how we went to, I think, was it Panama and got Manuel Noriega? Remember that? Okay.
Uh-huh.
Here's the story behind that. He was working with the DEA, playing us against the drug lords, giving the DEA critical intelligence about the drug lords, and then giving the drug lords critical intelligence on us, okay? When he stopped playing ball with the U.S., we went down and got it.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with Saddam Hussein.
Uh-huh.
We helped Saddam's army. We gave his army weapons, critical intelligence to fight his 8-year war against Iran. Because I saw a video, and I think it's still on YouTube, where I see Donald Rumsfeld, who was out there in the Secretary of Defense, sitting in a high-level cabinet meeting with Saddam Hussein and all his military advisors, okay? And we talked about him having weapons mass destruction, which is an outright lie. Okay, but
right.
If he did have his weapons, but if he did have weapons of mass destruction, where do you think he got them from?
United States.
Yeah, think about that.
Well,
same thing with what's the guy?
Bin Laden.
Bin Laden. We helped his organization, which is the Mujahideen.
Uh huh.
Fight that 10-year war against the Soviets.
Yep.
Same one as was public enemy number one, responsible 9/11 and all this.
Yeah, another thing about that.
Our government has had alliance with some of these, you know, these people that they claim are this and that, terrorists and all this other kind of stuff. But we've done business with them.
You know, real quick about 9/11, side note, I didn't realize, but we'll get into a little bit of kidney assassination a little bit, but I heard that when they were doing this whole, I can't remember, so don't quote me on it, but they were, it came out that the United States were going to have drone planes shoot them down to blame Cuba to start a war or something like that. So what makes you think that they didn't do that to 9/11? I seen like the documentary Loose Change where they weren't even passenger planes that hit the Twin Towers. Did you see that?
I saw parts of it. But here's the thing about 9/11. Now just use your eyes and common sense.
Uh huh.
Two big Twin Towers and building number 7 all went down, right?
Right.
You didn't have two planes. Why did Building 7 go there? It wasn't hit by anything. What made it go there?
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Well, it looked to me when I first saw it, it looked too perfect. And they were saying, I heard there were new reports that it was some kind of implosion that.
You cannot get a building that. You cannot get a building to implode.
Right.
On itself like that, that fast, that free fall speed.
Yeah, exactly.
Without it being some kind of demolition. No way. No way. But you know, you had the experts out there, oh, this is what actually happened. The jet fuel from the planes melted the beams and caused the building to collapse. They showed a picture or a video. I saw the video of a building in Spain. That was on fire and burned all night because for some reason they couldn't put the blaze out of something. It just burned all night. Never went down.
Never went down.
Never went down.
And I think it's funny, too, how supposedly they found a passport from the airplane from one of the terrorists. How is a passport going to be not all burned up?
Just look at who was supposed to be the ringleader, Muhammad Atta. Now, supposedly, the FBI had Muhammad Atta on the FBI terrorist watch list. They photographed him coming through the Boston, I think it was Boston Logan Airport or whatever it's called. Now, if he was on the FBI terrorist watch list, why didn't they grab him at the airport? Why didn't they even let him on the plane if that was the case?
Right.
In September 8th, 9th, and 10th, you didn't know nothing about no terrorists. September 12th, 13th, 14th, they got 19 hijackers flashed all over the news. That had to be the quickest investigation in history.
Yeah. Well,
I'm looking at it like, when did you find that out?
Exactly.
How fast did the FBI come up with this information? Where did this information come from?
Now, you know, another conspiracy is they're saying, they never did get Bin Laden. They just said they did. There was no pictures or whatnot, or they, when they.
No, there's never no pictures of the body. No.
What do you think about that?
Me personally, I don't believe it. And I'm gonna tell you something else. Now, I read a book by an author by the name of Peter Berg, and he wrote a detailed book, because I still have the book. I read the entire book cover to cover. Okay, and he made a detailed account of how he met with Bin Laden in Afghanistan, how he talked to him, you know, learned everything about his organization, blah, blah, blah. Now, the interesting fact of this is the government can never find this man. But he was able to have an interview with him and write a book about it.
Right, right, yeah, yeah.
Now, how is that possible? But see,
exactly.
we here in America have been so dumbed down by the media, the corporate-controlled mass media, to believe whatever they tell us. We got, just like the election, we're so polarized. With Clinton, Trump, Clinton, he said this, and they said that, and blah, 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 yada, yada, yada. We're not really paying attention to what's actually going on in this country. Your rights are systematically being taken away from you, and we don't even realize it. Why do you think the Patriot Act was signed into law?
Oh.
They could hold you as an enemy combatant. Don't even have to get into charges. Because see, 9/11 allowed them to do that.
Yep.
How are you gonna have a Department of Homeland Security? Okay. Think about this. How are you gonna have a Department of Homeland Security? What's that mean? Securing the homeland. With your borders, Mexico wide open, your border to Canada wide open. How's that? These are some of the things people just don't think about. Donald Trump ain't gonna build no wall. How many friends have you heard talk about that? I'm gonna build a wall. I'm gonna do this. No, you're not.
He must have forgot about the
wall.
Tunnel.
No. He said Mexico. He's gonna build a wall, and Mexico's gonna pay for it.
Yeah.
How are you gonna pull that off? You gonna build a wall and make another country pay for it? I guarantee you, if Donald Trump gets elected, now watch what I'm saying. If Donald Trump gets elected, 4 years from now, the border to Mexico will still be open, just like it was when Bush was in office, just like it was when Clinton was in office, just like it was when Obama's in office. Okay? It doesn't matter who's president of the United States. They can tell you anything they want to tell you, so you get all riled up about voting and stuff like that, and which is your civic duty to vote. I get that. But that's all the power you have. When you go in that voting booth and vote for one guy or this guy or whatever, that's where your power stops. Because the shadow government, the people behind the scenes that actually run the country, they control both sides.
Well, okay, I got a question for you. Why in the heck is, okay, you know when you vote, they have like 10 or 15 other people on the ballot for president. Why is it always just the Democrat and Republican doing the debates and stuff? Why won't they let other parties do it?
Like I said, the Democrats and the Republicans, they control both sides. Now, one thing the Democrats and Republicans can agree on, they don't want a third party in there.
So
they
pretty much
you want polarized. They want to keep you polarized where you just got to choose one side or the other side, which they control both sides. So whether you vote for a Democrat president or a Republican is going to be president, they got you either way you look at it.
So do you think it's a work? Do you think it's a work like wrestling? They're enemies and behind closed doors are drinking and eating together?
Yeah, they're all friends. They're all, well, okay, well, look at this. You remember when John Kerry ran against George Bush?
Who?
Yeah. When John Kerry ran against George Bush,
yes.
Here's a little cheat sheet for you. A little known fact that a lot of people don't know.
Okay.
George Bush and John Kerry are cousins.
Really?
Way down the line, like 15th or 16th cousins, but they're still cousins. But here's an interesting fact. They both belong to the secret society, Skull and Bones.
Bones, Skull and Bones. Yeah, I was just going to ask you that. Okay.
Yeah, both of them. Okay.
Ain't most of the presidents in that? Or?
Most of these people, most of these presidents, so-called presidents, when they pick their cabinet, if you look at their background, either come from Skull and Bones or the Council on Foreign Relations or members of the Trilateral Commission. A lot of people are not aware of that.
Wow.
They just don't pick, oh, you're going to be secretary of blah, blah, blah. You're going to, no. You know, the president and his top advisors?
Yeah.
That's what most of the cabinets consist of. Jimmy Carter had him in his administration. Bill Clinton had him in his administration. Just like Bill Clinton was president of the United States, and I thought the president was supposed to help his citizens, to better their lives and stuff like that. You signed the North American Free Trade Agreement into law. Well, we all know the disaster that was. Because the company starts shipping jobs to Mexico.
Wow.
Where they can get their cheap labor.
Yep. And then sell it back to the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Well, time's going by pretty quick, but I want to touch a little bit on the Kennedy assassination.
Okay.
So what's your take about Oswald?
Oswald was a low-level intelligence operative that worked for the United States government. That's all he was. Now, he went to Russia, had a high-level security clearance.
Uh-huh.
Okay. He worked for the Office of Naval Intelligence, the ONI. Okay. Come back. He renounced his citizenship when he was over there. Come back to the United States and brought back a Russian wife. Now, how is that
Wait. So he renounced being American?
Yeah.
And then he came back?
Came back with a Russian wife. And she thought he was Russian because his Russian was so good. So, you know, I suspect he was trained. He was over there on some kind of mission for our government and remained on that mission to the day he died.
Like a spy or something?
I know he was a radio operator. And I know Gary Powers was flying a lot of U-2 missions. And with them thinking he's Russian, they could, he could have given the Russian enough intelligence data to actually bring that plane down. And as a result of that happening, the summit between our leader and their leader failed that year. Since a certain amount of people that didn't want the peace when John Kennedy was in office that he wanted for the world. Now, you have to look at the forces, the people who had the motive and the means and the opportunity to assassinate the president. The CIA didn't like him because of the Bay of Pigs, when he failed to provide air cover for the Cuban Brigade, okay? Director J. Edgar Hoover of the FBI didn't like him. Lyndon Baines Johnson sure as hell didn't like him. So he had a lot of enemies within his own administration. And when he wanted to pull the advisors out of Vietnam, you know, a bunch of them got together and said, you know, he's got to go.
Wow. Do you think there was a Kennedy
camp?
What's that?
Go ahead.
No. I was going to say, do you think after that there was just a Kennedy curse, how these Kennedys were dying off? Do you think they were off by the government?
I don't know about that. But they sure as hell got Bobby and Jack. That's for sure.
Yeah.
But you got to think it, when you are an outspoken leader and you are upsetting people, something's got to be done. And not only did they get Kennedy and his brother, they got Martin Luther King and Malcolm X too.
Yeah.
These were turbulent times in the 60s. And if you look at all the wars we've gotten into. They all started with some type of false flag operation. And what I mean by that is to make them, a false flag operation to make the American people think or sway their opinion as to what's really going on. In World War One, the Lusitania got sunk with American passengers on board. That brought us in the war. In World War Two, it was Pearl Harbor.
Okay, now.
In Vietnam, it was the Gulf of Tonkin incident. And then and as far as Iraq and Afghanistan, the wars there was 9/11.
Well, go back to the Pearl War, Pearl Harbor one. What's the conspiracy on that?
The conspiracy with that is that our government knew well in advance that the Japanese were going to burn bomb Pearl Harbor. Matter of fact, our president at that time and his administration did everything they could to anger the Japanese. They publicly declared neutrality. And what that means is they didn't want to have anything to do with the war publicly, but looking for an excuse to get in it.
So what provokes the Japanese?
You got to understand. This is what I want you to understand.
Uh-huh.
All these bankers, all these international bankers back then, made billions and billions and billions of dollars from war profit. War is the biggest business for international bankers because they finance both sides of the conflict. So it doesn't matter who wins. They can care less about who wins.
Well, did Dick Cheney have a stake in the Iraq War? Did he own part of Halliburton?
Yeah. He was a former CEO of Halliburton. Halliburton gets a contract to rebuild Iraq. How the hell did that happen? conflict of interest much? Yeah, I think so.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Let me touch on this situation with Oswald. Then we're gonna get off this topic.
But
nitrate tests indicate that Oswald hadn't even fired a weapon on November 22nd, 1963. And on top of that, they didn't bother to find out the weapon had been fired that day. Now, most times when you get arrested for killing someone, you allow access to a lawyer.
Yes.
They interrogated Oswald for I don't know how many hours without no lawyer present. And any people in, you know, the police can't know what I can't have a lawyer here. Anything he said would be inadmissible in court. But then again, Jack Ruby took care of that.
Right. Just killed him. Yep.
Okay. The president gets killed, and 48 hours later, his alleged assassin gets killed. Don't that seem kind of wacky to you?
Yeah.
Now, I've studied the case for over 25 years, and what started me in it was going to see JFK, movie by Oliver Stone. So I started digging into it and started doing some research, and I got books by Jim Mars and Jim Garrison, who was the only person to ever prosecute a case in the Kennedy killing. I got his book, and I started digging into it. Okay, now, here's an interesting fact. The Warren Commission said three shots were fired by Lee Harvey Oswald, and they were all fired from behind the president. They wanted to keep the assassination in the direction of the school book depository. But here's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the Zapruder film, you can see Kennedy in one of the frames clutching his throat. That was a shot from the front. Okay? Of course, we know the head shot. That was another shot from the front. Kennedy was hitting the back. That's at least three shots right there to hit a human target. But where did the bullet come from to hit Governor Conley? What about the bullet in the windshield of the limousine? What about the bullet holes in the door panel? What about the bullet that flew over the limousine and Nick James T, who's standing on the triple underpass?
Oh, there was more? I didn't know about the ones that hit the doors and stuff of the car.
Yeah, I got pictures of all that. If you go get a book by the name of Robert Groden, and I got a copy of this, by Robert Groden, it's the complete photographic of the assassination, complete photographic record. It talks about all the major characters of who they were involved with, what organization they worked for. It talks about the ballistics evidence. The autopsy talks about all that. And I was like sitting there looking, I said, well, wait a minute. If he was hit, as soon as you have a frontal shot, Oswald can't be the shooter.
Right. Now, the guy that was in the car next to him that was shielding his kid, I heard someone say that they interviewed him and they said there one bullet came over his shoulder, right? And then the war, they didn't even have him come in trial to testify.
Oh, you're talking about the war commission?
Yeah, the war commission. The guy that was closest to Kennedy. I'm sorry.
You talking about the bullet that was closest to the fire from the grass, you know?
Yeah, that's the one.
Mm-hmm.
And then they didn't even interview the guy or have him testify.
Why do you think that was? I'm gonna tell you why that happened.
Because it didn't.
The reason anybody that contradicted the official story that they were trying to put out, they didn't even interview.
That's crazy.
Hey, some people you could come in and testify and tell what happened, but it contradicted the lone gunman theory, and that Oswald killed the president with only three bullets, which is absolutely untrue, by the way.
Wow.
Your testimony was deemed to be mistaken, or most likely didn't happen, or stuff like that, because a lot of people that testified before the Warren Commission, when they actually got a copy of the 26 bonds of the Warren Commission, found that the testimony had been altered.
Wow.
So you got to understand something. Police detectives and police personnel are accustomed to solving murders. That's what they're trained to do.
Right.
Okay. Now, the police in Dallas, in any normal investigation involving any kind of homicide, would pick it up and run with it. And they would run with it unless somebody stopped them. So somebody stopped them, there's your cover up.
Yep.
Now, who requisitioned all the evidence related to the case? J. Edgar Hoover, the director of the FBI.
Wow.
Because he had the jurisdiction.
Wow.
He could do it.
Wow.
Yeah, here's a little thing about J. Edgar Hoover that you don't know. He kept files on presidents. That's why he stayed in his job so long. He got dirt on any president that came in office.
Really?
Yeah, and would use it against him. And he was fearful that he was going to be fired or retired as FBI director when Kennedy was off. Because if you remember the B.F. Peak invasion, he fired Alan Dulles, head of the CIA. And John Cabell and a couple other few people that were hired, you know, up in the government. Kennedy got rid of them. So here again, think about it. Motive, means, and opportunity. Who had the motive and the means and opportunity? Because you got to understand something. There's people that were smart enough and powerful enough to take out a president and get away with it for 50 years are still some of the same people involved in running this country right today. Same force still at work.
Do you think the truth will ever come out?
Eventually. You know, because all of
dead.
Well, everybody's by now has been dead.
Yeah.
But the House Select Committee on Assassination has all the files and everything related to the case, but that's locked up till 2039. I'll probably be dead and gone by the time that happens. Who knows?
Wow. Well, hey, brother, we're running out of time here.
Okay.
We definitely got to do another episode, but please give all the fans, listeners out there, all your links and how promoters want to book you, your social media links, do all your plugs or anything, any shout-outs, the forum is yours.
Okay, well, like I said, I'm still working on the book. The title of the new book will be hashtag Booking 101, a self-help guide for professional wrestlers. You can also find me on Facebook, Louis McNair, LouisMcNair. You can send me a friend request and say, hey, I heard your show on the Boshy's radio show. Heard you, you know, your interview, whatever. You can also follow me on Twitter at SYDogBrand, Area 51 at SYDogBrand. You can follow me there on Twitter. You can also check out my website, www.sydsite.com. That's SYDSITE.com. And you can also go to therevolution.com, which is a heel group, heel faction I'm involved in. So those are some of the areas that you can check out what I'm doing and see what I'm into, you know, what I got possibly coming up in the future, because I post all my stuff up on all my social media links.
All right. All right. Yeah. Hey, do me a favor. Can you give a sign guy a shout out for me?
Hey, sign guys. This is the Scrapyard Dog. How you doing, brother? Want to give you a shout out. Say what's up. Get up with your real, get up with you real soon. You know, keep in touch. I know we follow each other on Twitter. Been Twitter friends for quite a while. Just want to give you that shout out, brother.
Awesome, awesome. Well, brother, it was a pleasure. We're definitely going to have you on again. You got me really thinking. I'm going to be doing some homework. All right, people, until next time, ring the bell.
That's all, folks.
Dobashi's Radio Takedown is a Seisoha Dynamite Productions.
Huss!
Do you know what's not $9.99 and absolutely free?
The Radio Takedown Network!
The Radio Takedown Network.com.
SasquatchProWrestling.com.